Parshas Bishalach is perhaps most famously known for its first half, with the splitting of the Red Sea and the Jews' final salvation from the Egyptians. However, I'd like to focus on another famous miracle that followed the Jews throughout the following 40 years in the desert, that of the man. Let's take a closer look at what happened. After several weeks of journeying, the Jews complained that they were hungry, specifically that they missed having meat and bread. So Hashem says to Moshe, "Tell them that he will provide meat and bread." That evening, a swarm of quail come, and in the morning, as the dew evaporated from the ground, and the Jews saw what we now know as man. Remember, they had no idea what it was. As the pasuk says, "Vayiru v'nei Yisrael, vayomru ish el achiv, manhu, ki lo yadu mahu, vayomer Moshe alehem, hu halechem asher nasan Hashem lachem le'achla." Each man said to his friend, "What is it?" Because they didn't know what it was. And Moshe told them, "This is the bread which God has given you to eat." Following this, they're told how much they should collect each day and that they'll receive a double portion on Friday, since Shabbos is a holy day of rest and no man will fall. And we're told that the Jews kept Shabbos. But then comes a pasuk which seems strange. Vayikra'u veis Yisrael es shemo man, v'hu kizera gad lavan v'ta'amo ketzapichit badvash. B'nei Yisrael called it man, and it was like a coriander seed. It was white, and it tasted like a cake fried in honey. Why did the Torah wait until now, 15 psukim later, to tell us how it tasted? Furthermore, why does it seem to repeat that they called it man? It already said earlier that they called it man. Manhu, that's what it says. In his book Predictably Irrational, Dan Ariely, an Israeli professor of psychology and behavioral economics at Duke University, shared the following experiment he ran to see if knowledge merely informs us before making a decision, or perhaps does it actually affect the sensory perceptions. He went to a college bar on the MIT campus and offered students two samples of beer. One was a regular beer, like Sam Adams. The taste test was done, after all, in Boston. And one was the recipe for MIT brew, regular beer and 2 drops of balsamic vinegar per ounce of beer. In the first part of the experiment, some students were given the 2 cups as a blind taste test, without being told about the vinegar at all, and were offered a full glass of the one that they preferred. Most students chose beer B with the vinegar. Another group of students were given the 2 sample cups of beer, but this time were told in advance more about the 2 beers and that one of them had vinegar inside. Predictably, most students in that case preferred beer A without the vinegar. And the conclusion so far is that if you tell people up front that something's going to be distasteful, then they likely will agree with you because of their expectation. But now they moved on to part 2 of the experiment. This time, they told the first group about the vinegar before doing the initial taste test. However, they only told the second group about the vinegar after they had already innocently tasted the beers and then offered them the ability to add the vinegar themselves to their full free glass of beer. And you know what? 2x as many students in this group were willing to add the vinegar themselves than those who knew about the vinegar from the get-go. On the flip side, Dan notes if you had 2 caterers proposing to make you a grilled chicken dish, one described as such, a grilled chicken dish, and the other in greater depth and detail, "Oh, I'll serve you tender grilled chicken, roasted on an open flame, basted with a mango chili sauce and a hint of mint." You can only imagine which one you'll choose and perceive as tasting better. What Dan learned from this and several other experiments he ran is that pre-knowledge can change our expectations and influence our taste or opinion, both negatively, as in the case of the beer with vinegar, or sometimes even positively, as in the case with the caterers. Going back to the man, Rabbi Avram Nissan Yaffe, in his Sefer Zera Avram, writes, "You know what happened between the first time Bnei Israel experienced the man and the second pasuk when they described its taste? Shabbos. They all kept a true Shabbos for the first time ever in their lives. The first Shabbos the week before, some of them went out looking for the man. They didn't keep the Shabbos fully. Only the second week, Vayishbesu ha'am bayom hashvi'i, and they rested on the Shabbos. Until this point, suggests Rabbi Yaffe, the Jews were unable to taste the true taste of the man, and that's why they didn't describe a taste until now. In fact, perhaps that's why Moshe tells them they should cook and bake whatever they want to do with the man on Friday, since they can't cook on Shabbos. Seemingly, the reason they need to bake it is because until this point, it had no discernible taste. It was bland and required some doctoring, because the taste of the man was one rooted in spirituality. It was holy bread from heaven. However, once they had experienced the holiness of Shabbos, their pre-knowledge and expectations for the taste of the holiness were positively predisposed. Now they taste the man as if for the first time from this new perspective, and they can finally note its inherent heavenly taste, sweet as honey. Perhaps this is also why they once again name it man, even though they had already called it man. While it translated the first pasuk in the most literal sense, Vayomru ish el achiv manhu, that they referred to it as manhu, meaning what is this? Which makes sense since the continuation of the pasuk says they didn't know what it was. In other words, they called it man based on the Egyptian or Aramaic word for what, since they didn't know exactly what it was, and that was the nickname it had, the food that we don't know what it is. However, there is one opinion that the Ksav, the Kabbalah, brings, that the word man, based on several different psukim, means something valuable. The Jews didn't think this was food. They thought it was a valuable jewel or stone that fell from heaven, which is why Moshe has to explain to them, no, it's food. Vayomru ish el achiv, they say to their friends, meaning they colloquially refer to it as the valuable thing. But now, after experiencing the Shabbos, they officially call it man, not because it consisted of physically precious matter, but because they now appreciated its value vis-a-vis its holiness. Every morning we begin davening with brachos, which on the surface seems like praise or thanks to Hashem for our various faculties and amenities. Shelo asani aved, thanking Hashem that I'm not a slave. Malbish arumim, thanking the one who clothes the naked. Zokef kefufim, thanking the one who straightens the bent over. But if you think about it, what we're also doing is starting off our day by providing pre-knowledge, providing an expectation and understanding and appreciation that will influence our whole day. It forces us to be aware that everything that will happen today, everything that we're able to do today, is really all from Hashem. Not just the individual topics of the brachos, but really a perspective on life in general. We may no longer receive the early morning delivery of the daily man from Shemayim, but whether we're cognizant of it or not, we do receive heavenly assistance throughout our day. By starting our morning with the pre-knowledge that Hashem still provides for us, it'll hopefully sweeten our appreciation and outlook on life and how valuable everything is that He does for us. I'll drink to that, even with a little bit of vinegar. Shabbat Shalom.